Good morning, Southern Arizona and the rest of you out there in cyberspace. Welcome to the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk Show right here in beautiful, dark Tucson, Arizona. I'm Jerry Simmons, your host, and along with me is my good buddy and my co-host, Mr. Jim Mooney, Frontier Towing, for all of your towing needs. Been there and towed that. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Jerry. Good morning, everybody out there in cyberspace. Thanks for being along. Remember, live call-in talk show, 520-719-1490. And again, we're back to Saturday. Made it through the whole week, and it's super safe Saturday, folks. That means no drinking and driving, no texting and driving. Move over and slow down if you see a car with flashing lights. That includes grandma's grocery getter. Watch out for those bicyclists and dog walkers. It's going to be a pretty nice day today, but just letting you know that it's a little dark right now, and sometimes people don't always wear a little reflective gear. They can just jump up out of the middle of nowhere. Mirrors and door jams have a tendency to create great blind spots, so watch it. Do extra care when you're out there driving this morning. Watch out for those dog walkers. You're working on your car? As always, put down the jack stands if you're jacking it up. It's not raining, so at least you won't be laying in the driveway in the rain today. I got to say that. That's a better deal than it was last week. Chalk your wheels so it doesn't go anywhere. Use your hood prop. Put your keys in your pocket. Disconnect your electrical if you're working on wiring. Roll up your sleeves if you're working on a running motor, or you get your hair out of the way, if your hair gets in the way. Jerry's tip, don't stand in front of the car when it's running, just in case it will jump into gear, which is a super, super great tip, because that always ends up bad. So other than that, I think we're off to a running start here this morning. How about that, Jerry?
We're doing pretty good. You know, I belong to a business club during the week, and this week we had a special guest that come on, and now you were talking about people walking. Now, Mark come on, and he is a Game and Fish wildlife officer. He's the PR officer for Game and Fish, and he was talking about something that's kind of dear to everybody's heart now, rabies, and you're talking about people walking out early in the morning before it's daylight. These are the carriers, primary carriers, foxes, skunks, bobcats, javelina, and if you've been paying attention to the news, we've had more incidents with javelina biting them, and the fox was out in Soar East, rabies is a virus. And it spreads real easy, and it's dangerous as a son of a gun. And so when you're out there walking and riding your bike and stuff like that, if you see an animal, especially in the daylight, and it's around 10:30 in the morning, and it's walking around, it's staggering, it's foaming at the mouth, it's walking around in circles, anything weird, call Game and Fish. Call these people and get some help out there, because these things are dangerous. Even if you don't have rabies, get somebody on it, because they eat at night, they work at night, they're normally in by the time the sun's up. So, and for you people riding that bicycle before it gets daylight, you need to pay attention, because there's a lot of stuff moving around at that particular time. And the thing you don't want to do is run into a javelina on a bicycle or anything else, as far as that goes. But I have seen the rabbit javelina. I have seen the rabbit skunks in Soar National Park. And that's one dangerous thing. So, you know, we're going to add that this morning to the pay attention and try to keep you safe while you're out there. But that is real right now. It's been real. You just need to pay attention to it. A lot of people are hiking now that didn't used to hike. A lot of people are riding bicycles, didn't used to ride bicycles. Well, this is a new little thing that you just really need to pay attention to. I know they got all sorts of signs that beware of the animals. No, beware of the animals. In other words, yes, that is very, very real. It's just not a mute statement that somebody throws out. Pay attention, because it can get really nasty out there. That's all I got to say. You got anything you want to add to that, Jim?
That's super good. Yes, if you're out there walking, the nocturnal animals are out at night. Yes, I can tell you. The other day, I was leaving to come to work, and I ran. I didn't run across one. I saw one. It was a Gila monster. Let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. That startled me to death. I saw him, and he was big. He was like 18 inches long. Big old Gila monster. Man, that's something that'll light you up in the morning if you think you want to end your day quick, is getting tangled up with a Gila monster. But snakes,
they're real good.
That, yeah, javelina. I see javelina routinely driving, either to or from work.
Oh, yeah.
I see them. I see a single, but I'll most often see the pack with the, you know, with the male guards at each end, and then the mamas and the babies all running. I see them routinely. So and you know, folks, this is the craziest thing. I see them all over. I see them at I saw the one. They were at the I forget, it was like the drugstore, and they were running through the parking lot like the QVC, and it was in the middle of town. And I was like, where did the javelina come in the middle of town?
Well they've got to get their drugs. They got to get their drugs.
Maybe they were going to get the weight loss drug, whatever that new one is. I think they were trying to head to a wash, you know, to jump down in a wash. But, you know, nevertheless, they're out there all the time, and you know,
according to Mark, they are all over town. They travel in the washes and stuff like that. You're right there. The little walkways, you'll find them on a walkway, like on a golf course. You'll find them going down the lanes, you know, the golf cart lanes. And but they're just, you know, they're there. Their eyesight sucks, but their hearing and smell is exceptional. And you do not want to tangle with a javelina that's got babies around. If it's got babies around, you better be exit. Don't you worry about it, because there ain't nothing you're going to do but get your hind end chewed up. I seen a guy that had climbed a saguaro cactus. I actually seen the guy. He was at big old tire stores, and he had these on his wrist and stuff. He had these little dots that looked like you'd taken a needle or a pin and just dotted his bottom of his wrist. And I said, hey, that's kind of, what do you do, grab a cactus or something? Yep. And then he opened his shirt sleeve and looked, and here's all these dots going on up the arm. And so he said, look at this. And he looked around. There wasn't anybody in the store but me and him and one other guy. And he opened his shirt. He had a Western shirt on with snaps on it. He just unsnapped his shirt. That guy had literally climbed a saguaro cactus getting away from a mama javelina that the babies were there. And he hugged that cactus. He spent over 3 hours in the hospital getting that cactus pulled out of him. His chest, his legs, the thighs of his legs, his arms, the inside of his arms. And I said, I can't even say anything. He said, you know, it was better than the alternative, because that javelina was right on my heels. I mean, right on my heels. And I just jumped and grabbed that cactus, which made it a little worse. He said, but to be honest with you, I didn't even feel it until I got ready to get off of the thing. And but the mama, you got the babies. If there's babies, there's a mama, and the rest of them are there somewhere. Stay away from it. Just get out of there. So they're in Tucson.
Wow.
They're in Tucson. The foxes, a lot of foxes. These things are nasty, so just beware. Add that to your list of things to watch out for. Okay. All right.
I would not want to crawl a saguaro cactus. My goodness, I can't even imagine how crazy that was. Tampa, so ouch.
It was you couldn't, I don't think you could get a special effects artist to put as many I just don't think you can copy that, what I seen on that guy's chest and arms. It was horrible. Man, that other guy in the store, he looked at it and he go, "Good Lord." I said, "Yeah, don't mess with wildlife." And for the ones of you out there, by the way, there is mountain lions around Tucson, Arizona, in these mountains. And they're alive and happy. They will see you a long time before you'll see them. And, you know, that's the way they work. And they have no problem with eyesight. They have no problem with hearing. And they can walk so quiet you can't hear them move. That's the reason I don't go out early in the morning on a hike like Sabino Canyon and back up in there. Yeah. And the Catalina Mountains. They've got them all the way down. They got black bears down south. And I there's a lot of welcome to Arizona, the Wild West. If you're going to go out there and, you know, don't sneak around in the desert. They need to know you're there too. And, you know, you just be careful. That's all. That's my fishing game report this morning. So,
oh my goodness. Wow.
You got anything you want to add to that, Jim?
I can't add anything to a guy who climbed a saguaro cactus, or a barrel cactus, or any cactus for that matter. I mean, I guess it's better than trying to climb a cholla, which would then you just be, everything would be stuck to you. At least the saguaro stayed in its place, and you just had pinpricks. You know, don't get me wrong, thousands of pinpricks. But if you were trying to tackle a cholla,
well,
you'd have the whole cactus with you. So,
and when you come off of the saguaro, those needles are sticking in you, and you have to get every one of them out, because at the end of those little things have a little bit of poison in them.
Oh.
You know that. So, you know, you can look like you're had a bad infection when you get under that. We've seen it. I come off a horse and landed in it, and it took them. Oh my gosh, I had 47 spikes in my right hand, not my arm, my right hand. I had a jacket on that was actually pinned to my body by cactus. So yeah, I've been there and done that. That is not one thing I particularly care to share. Especially when you get in your truck and you have to ride to your house in your underwear because you can't put your clothes back on. I mean, you look around, there's nobody loaded. You think, okay, I'm the only one here in the parking lot now, so I don't see anybody. Boy, you get those cactus, it's got all that cactus in them. You get those clothes off, you throw them in the back floorboard. And you crawl in that truck and you drive, and that's one of the only time that I've ever towed where my needle from the house was on right off of empty. When I got down to where I was going on Broadway, it was empty. I had to tow back to the house, which is about 7.5 miles, with a needle on empty, driving in my underwear in my truck. I wasn't about to get on the radio and say, "Hey, somebody come and get me and make sure I get home," or anything like that on the radio. No, I'll just wait till dark and then walk home or something like that.
Oh.
So anyway, people, keep the gas tank filled up. You never know what's going to happen.
That's very good. You're right. Don't go someplace. Yeah, don't. You know, it happens all the time. You'll go someplace and you'll think, "Oh, I got a quarter of a tank. It'll be just fine," until the light comes on or you run out, one of the two. And you're sitting there thinking, mm-hmm. Oh. I drove by 6 gas stations, and the one I choose in is either jam-packed full or won't work. That's always my luck. I'm like, really? Seriously? So, yeah, got a really good tip. Yeah, don't leave with your gas tank empty. That's really, really important information. I know we don't ever think
yes.
about it. But people run out of gas all the time, so.
Well, I just, you know, I run out of gas in my Mustang, okay? 68 Mustang. All right, now I've got Hondas and I got your trucks and stuff. And you know, all the bill will come on. They go ding, 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 ding. You're down low. You only have about 70 miles left. You need to fill up. Okay, so you can fill up. Well, the Mustang don't have one of those little dingy dingies on it. And the needle gets down, may or may not be correct. Well, mine, when it says empty, it don't mean you have another 3 or 4 gallons in there. It means you're empty. And then I had to call my neighbor to come and get me, go down the barn and get the gas can, bring the gas can, and then we'll go fill it up, and then I'll get the Mustang. But she laughed, you know, she's 87 years old or something like that. She was laughing about that, and she said, yeah, I've done it. I run out of it. When I was in college, I'd drive one of the little Volkswagens that had a spare tank. And she said, we run out of it. And it was only like 19 cents a gallon then. And we didn't have money to put gas in this car because we were poor college students. And she said, so I know what that feels like when you run out of gas and even run out of gas in the spare tank. So I'm going, wow. Anyway, it happens. But now, if that needle don't show a quarter of a tank, I go straight to the gas station and I make sure that it's at least a quarter of a tank. And by the way, that kind of helps keep the rust down, because the rust it will accrue on whatever is above the fuel line in the gas tank, on the metal gas tank. Now, most of the gas tanks now are plastic, so you really don't have to worry about the rust coming in. But if you've got any metal components in there, you still have potential for rust. So, you know, just try to keep the fuel in there. Do use fuel conditioner. The manufacturers recommend using a can of their Super Duty fuel conditioners that you can buy from Ford or GM every time you have an oil change. Well, by the time you have an oil change at 10,000 miles or 15,000 miles, you pretty much got the damage already done inside there as far as, you know, using for cleaning the motor with the fuel conditioner. So just go ahead and around 5,000, 6,000 miles, just put your can of good top fuel conditioner in these engines, in the car. And buy your can. You can go by Merrill's and pick up a can of STP. No, STP does not pay me to do this. STP fuel treatment is a good one. BG Chemical has one of the better ones. BG, STP second. BG's first on as far as being good stuff. STP is cheap and actually is second. They've been around longer than I have. That's a long time.
That's a long time.
Yeah, you know, we're talking.
You make a great point about the fuel in the gas tank. Folks, if you never take one apart that has got rust in it, you will be shocked. Now, on a plastic tank, when the fuel goes bad, it gels up in the inside, and it looks like, oh, it's the nastiest stuff you'll ever see in your life. But it's pretty bad. But the fuel pumps and in the tanks, the new cars, and this anything that's metal will rust. And a classic car like Jerry's talking about, that thing will come out and it looks like you set it in a bath of acid. I'm not kidding you. It has so much rust on it, and inside the tank has so much rust. It's really bad. And the other thing is, you know, we never think about this, but you know, there's water in our fuel. And if Jesse Lugo was on, he could tell you all about it. But suffice it to say, there's water accumulates in your fuel just because the nature of it, of the way fuel is. If you want to talk about water and diesel, we can go a whole other segment on algae. But suffice it to say, there's water in your fuel. And we all know that water and oil or petroleum products have a tendency to separate. So long-term storage of a vehicle has a tendency to have the fuel separate from the water, right? So in the bottom of the tank, where the pickup is or the pump is, will be a higher concentration of water and less concentration of fuel. Why Jerry's talking about the fuel additives. Water eliminators like an alcohol product or the STP will help eliminate that, because it kind of grabs it, absorbs it, makes it, that, you know, runnable in the motor, because you want to have an awakening day trying to start a car that's got water in the bottom of the tank and all you're sucking up is water. That motor does not stomach it. It does not like it. So really, if you're going to have a car that sits, especially a classic that stores, fuel system maintenance is a very big key. You need to keep on top of that so that if you actually do want to take it out and run it, you don't have to worry about it choking, stalling, filling your carburetor full if it's running an old carburetor. You know, you want to get it full of water. You know, all the headaches that go with it. You know, all that stuff you don't want to come into play. So, and then the rust, like Jerry says, keeping it full helps keep the rust down. And that rust, it's amazing because, again, water and the fuel, you're sitting there thinking, why should it rust? It's gasoline. Well, because the water vapor in the tank just corrodes everything. And even the tanks are lined. They have liners on them. But there's a lot of just, you know, in a metal tank, there's just a lot of metal. So it has a tendency to rust and grow. And then, you know, if untreated or left unchecked, and now the rust gets on the sidewalls, the rust falls off, falls in the tank, it gets sucked up by the fuel system, and then you get rust in your fuel, in the fuel pump, you get it in carburetors, you get it in fuel filters, and you crack it open, and you'll go, oh, look, there's a bunch of rust in there. Folks, when there's rust at your fuel filter, you got a problem. Because it got all the way through the fuel system to get to your fuel filter, you got a problem. You're looking at some real time to work that fuel system. And I mean, I've seen them where, you know, they'll rust out older cars, you know, oh, it looks great. This, and you go to tap on the fuel tank and boom, splits wide open, you know, and there it sits. So you could be looking at fuel tank replacement, you know, on Jerry's 65 Mustang, pretty easy to get. I think they sell them at Safeway because it's, the parts are so common. I just, they don't sell them at Safeway. Maybe, you know. or a Camaro, an old-style Camaro. Yeah, you can get small block Chevy parts almost anywhere. But an older car, you want to work on something, you know, out of the 50s, you're going to start looking for something. Now you got to start looking for something to find. And, you know, it's available. You're just going to pay for it. So help yourself out and kind of do fuel system maintenance, especially on something, a classic that you don't run all the time. If you run the vehicle all the time, the likelihood of getting water in the fuel is really low because you're continually moving the fuel through the system. So it keeps it at bay. It's when you let it sit for 6 months, that's when the problem starts to occur. So you snowbirds, you're getting ready to think about leaving Arizona. You know, it's February. You know, you're starting to warm up wherever you're going. Missouri, yeah, like you think it's ever going to warm up over there. You know, still zero and snowing. But, hey, enjoy. You know, but when you get ready to leave, because it's going to happen here in a month. So before you take off, put a battery maintainer on your car or do something with the car so that the battery doesn't go dead, because it's going to go dead in 6 months. And two, get the fuel system treated. If you treat it, when you come back, the likelihood of you having an issue is far, far less. And it's a simple thing. Jerry just said STP, $8. It's a simple thing. Put it in there, run it around, and you're good to go. Put some stable in. There's all kinds of products.
Yes, go ahead with that stable. That stable has been around forever. Yeah.
Ever.
In your boats, lawnmowers.
Exactly. If you got a boat that you use during the wintertime here, or an RV, if you got an RV that you use twice a year, because we know you don't drive it every day, but you use it twice a year, put some stable in there. Do some fuel system treating. I know it's a pain. It's a lot less of a pain than it is to have it towed in. I mean, not that it's a pain for me, but it'll be a pain for you. And then have the entire fuel system cleaned out and all the injectors flushed, or have the carburetor cleaned out because there's crud in it. It happens all the time. But
most of the guys with the motorhomes, they have generators on them. people, make sure you put some stable in your fuel delivery system and run it. After you put it in, run it and make sure that it gets through the lines to your generators. That means you got to turn the generator on and run it. But get that stuff circulating to where it keeps everything so that it'll preserve it. If not, you're going to be spending a lot of money. And I've seen people where they'll put it in the motorhomes, which is great, but they don't fire off the generator and run it through the generator to protect it. Then at the end, when they get ready to fire it up again, the generator don't want to run. Then they pull it apart, and they got all this garbage in there. And, you know, same thing with race cars where you run alcohol. You get ready to put them up for the wintertime, you just shut the key off. You better do something besides shut the key off. I know a guy that uses WD-40 and sprays it down the carburetor till the motor dies. Never has any problem with it. That's with alcohol, because alcohol is very dry. And
dry.
That's just one thing that you might want to consider. But you can do, there's a lot of stuff that you can use in the automotive industry, the automotive additives, in the little things like chainsaws. Oh, yeah, well, I only got about a quart of gasoline in a chainsaw. What kind of damage can you have? Oh, my gosh. You can have everything that goes with it.
That's just right.
Goes, oh, no. And, of course, when you get ready to use the chainsaw, you got another half a day that you got plenty of time so you can rebuild the chainsaw and change the spark plugs and clearing out the fuel delivery system so that it'll actually work. Yeah, right.
Or you can have your arm look like Popeye the Sailor Man after you've pulled that thing about 7,000 times trying to get it to start, you know. How many times do you want to pull that chainsaw to make it run? Trust me, folks. I mean, most chainsaws, two-stroke, just a side load. If you buy the stuff in the quart cans, check it out, you know, the one that I know it costs $10 a quart, right? It really does. It's probably the most expensive stuff you're ever going to buy. But remember, you're buying a quart. But a lot of it has stable protection in it. It has stable already built in the fuel because they know you're just going to shut it off and put it in the garage and never not think about it again. So that's two-stroke.
That's right.
It's got the two-stroke proper mix, and it's got the stable already built in it. Might be worth a little bit of extra money. Just saying. Just check it to make sure. But, yeah, you want to spend a weekend trying to think you're going to do 15 minutes worth of work, and you spend 5 hours trying to get the chainsaw to run, and you've done everything. You've pulled the spark plugs, and you've sprayed fuel in it, and you've done everything, and you're pulled to your arm is about ready to fall off. You know, that's what happens if you don't take care of it. Now, how do I know
You can pull a Simmons and go down to these big box stores and stuff. When that chainsaw doesn't fire off like it's supposed to, you can buy one that has a battery on it for about $300 just because you're mad. Oh, and then you have that 40-volt battery go dead.
Yep.
I have learned a lot on these batteries and battery memories by having battery-powered utensils, hand tools, and stuff like that. Oh, my gosh. So, and if you haven't had that pleasure, go ahead and buy them. But you better read up on the battery and the batteries, how you can use a battery one time, and then next time you go use it, it's dead because it's got a memory in it or something, and you didn't do what you were supposed to do because, after all, you are an engineer. You should know what keeps these batteries alive. And then all of a sudden you go down, and the battery costs as much as the tool you're using. So, you know, and I'm sure that if you guys out there, gals that are using this stuff, have already figured that out. Don't leave a battery in a charger once it's charged.
Well, you can. It will just cook it. That's why they say unplug your cell phone. It's the same thing. But you're right, Jerry. You go to buy the battery. I'm going to buy the battery operated tool, which is fine. So you buy the weed eater that's got the 18 volt battery on it, which is great. Don't get me wrong. They work really nice. They got a lot of power until they go dead. You know, and then you got to get another battery. And when you go to buy the battery, and it's $79 for the battery, or $80, and it's like, my goodness, I'll get
That's
one
right.
on Amazon. I'll get the cheap one on Amazon for $35. And that works. Not as good, but it works for a little while. So Jerry makes a great point. Do some research. Check the stuff out before
yeah.
you do it. Because you can find some incredibly good deals and stuff and make your life really easy. And then you can do like me and, you know, pay full price because you need it right now. So
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And
by golly, I'm going to do this right now.
Right now. And no, I didn't have rewards points. And no, I didn't have a phone number listed with you guys. And I'm not on the special members club. Nope, I'm just going to pay full
That's
price.
Right.
There we go.
That's right. I'm going to pay full price. But by golly, I'll get it done. And people,
so,
don't cut a cactus with a chainsaw.
Oh.
Don't even think about it. The life of that chainsaw blade, chainsaw chain that you're going to be cutting with is about 30 seconds. When you hit it, because you're cutting into water. Water does not cooperate at all with knife blades. I mean, that's when you're not supposed to stick your cutlery and stuff in the side of a washing machine or dishwasher because of the high speed. They use water in a jet sprayer to cut metal, okay? When
right.
you put water, when you go after a cactus, that is nothing but a big old container of water sitting there, and you can cut it. And I'm telling you, because my brain went dead one morning, and I grabbed it, I said, oh, I just need to cut this little bitty one right here off. No. That one was no more than about 4 inches through, and before I got through with it, I didn't have a blade on my chainsaw. That's how fast it eat that chainsaw blade. So don't do that.
Well,
you want to use? If you want to try? Huh?
Not to mention the fact that, you know, okay, I get it. Cut a cactus, a barrel, or whatever cactus you think you're going to cut up with a chainsaw. Remember, you're going to be the chainsaw. When you cut wood with a chainsaw, they're sawdust, right? Last time I checked, you cut with a chainsaw, you're going to get sawdust on you, right? That's why you wear safety glasses. And I forgot to say that in my Super Safe Saturday. Well, put your safety glasses on. Or, better yet, put a face shield on, right? Because you're going to get – because stuff, debris is going to come in your face. So what do you think happens when you cut the cactus? Do you think the cactus needles aren't just going to come towards you? No, they're going to. You're going to be covered in cactus needles and thorns. And it's no big deal because they're just laying there, right? Well, okay, until you brush them and then get them all over your hands. So, yeah, it really doesn't work at all. If you're trimming cactus, it really is probably Jerry is 100% correct. Probably the worst thing you can do. Now, I get it. There's ways to tackle cactus. I'm not a cactus expert. I don't know how to tackle a cactus.
It's called
I'm not
a sawzall.
I'm not cutting down a saguaro. I'm not cutting out a barrel cactus. I might take a limb off a leaf off of a prickly pear. So.
The only time you need to trim a cactus is like some of these windstorms that come in and break off an arm and it lands. You can't pick up one of those arms. I mean, if you've got an arm that's 4 foot long and about 10 inches around, you've got about 250 pounds laying there and because it's all water. And you think, well, I'll just cut a chunk off of here and I'll be able to divide and conquer. Nope. Dividing costs you a lot of money. You're better off to leave the darn thing laying there and let it dry out, then do it. But then you can pick it up as one piece and get it hauled off. But, you know, even with a tractor, when you're trying to handle cactus, uh-uh. But that's a booger. You wrap it in saddle blankets and everything else trying to keep from getting eat up by it. So how do we get on to handling cactus? Oh, okay.
I don't know. Well, we got going crazy with the fuel thing, but But yeah, if you're well, it's a chainsaw. The chainsaw we got going on the chainsaw thing with the with the not maintaining it. But you're 100% right, Jerry. If you're gonna do all that stuff, well, maintain but on the plus side, if you choose not to maintain your fuel system in your chainsaw or your motorhome, the likelihood of you having to go cut the cactus down, well, is low because it isn't gonna work. But just saying, if that's your now, for all you guys out there that wanna get out of honeydews, that's a great angle. I mean, it's kind of a long. It's like talking about going around the horn. That's kind of a long angle to make to get out of something. I think there's a better way, but hey, who am I to say what people do? So, but at any rate, yeah. So, fuel system maintenance. If maintain the fuel systems on all your and Jerry made a great point about running the stable. If you don't run the stable through the motor, it doesn't get there. It's kind of like mixing, you got to stir it up, right? Run it up, mix it up a little bit, and of course, if you have a CNG generator on your motorhome, it doesn't apply. You don't have to worry about putting fuel additive in CNG,
right. Okay?
But just remember to fuel your CNG up because, when it runs out, you're out. I guess have the adapter. Some of them have the adapter where you can hook a portable bottle to your generator. So have that. That's kind of a cool, neat thing. But for the rest of the stuff out there, because if you're out camping and your generator doesn't work, it's not going to be fun. It'll be less fun. You won't be able to use your phone.
Well,
surf all those.
The name of the game is the name of the game is to maintain your car completely, not just pick on it. And when I say pick on it, and they say, put a can of engine cleaner in it every time you change the oil. No, you need to put just a little more in it. Carbon starts building in a car at 7,000 miles. By the time you get to 7,000, you've already got carbon inside these engines. And more of it is there than it used to be because of the gasoline direct injected, where it goes straight into the cylinder. All right. So you've got, and if you don't maintain that and keep that out, soft carbon turns to hard carbon. And you need to keep the fuel delivery system clean because what used to go through something as a port at the end of the injectors as big as a bottom of an ink pen is now about as tiny as you can't even get a needle to go in the hole because it's smaller than a needle. I mean, that's how it's refined down. So if you've got garbage coming out of the fuel tank because it's got water and it's got some heavy, got a little bit of rust on the side and it's going through, trying to get through this, no, it doesn't work that way. And if you've got a diesel and you don't keep that diesel has algae that accrues in the bottom of the fuel tank. And that stuff comes up, and it looks like fish food under a microscope. And it goes in to the fuel filters. Now, most of your diesels have dual fuel filters. My 06 diesel had three fuel filters on it. Number one would clog almost up. Number two would get a little bit in it from just the overflow of the first one, and then by the time it got to the one that protects the engine, it was clean. So that's what you would like to have. But the two filters, GM's had them longer than Dodge has, and then you got Ford. Anything that has a diesel should have at least two good filters on it to keep this garbage out of the diesel fuel. Diesel fuel is a lot better than it used to be, but it's not bulletproof. And when you've got all the emissions crap that's on these engines now and everything that's involved with the diesel fuel, did it have water in it when they filled it up at the tank in Alabama and you stopped in there and fueled up and come across country? There's a lot of stuff. So diesel fuel conditioner is super critical on a diesel. So get it. You can buy the diesel fuel conditioner from brain fade. Service, it's like Service Pro, something like that, Service Pro or something. Anyway, they've got a good diesel fuel conditioner. Merle sells them. Yeah, you've got you can go to Merrill's and get a diesel fuel conditioner that helps control all this stuff. And I'm looking. It'll come to me as soon as I quit talking about it. It'll come. It'll all pop back in.
You know, Jim, bring up, that's a really good point about the fuel conditioner in a diesel. So if you've never drive a diesel and you've never experienced algae, well, you're very lucky. And if you when you do, you're in for a real treat. The algae, which has a tendency to live in the water and the fuel, and it just accumulates in the bottom because, well, the water separates from the diesel. The algae does a couple of things. One, it really plugs up your filters, and I mean, folks, like in 30 seconds. Once you decide to get algae in your fuel, and if you kill it, you can rest assured you are going to plug up some fuel filters. So get ready for lots of oil, fuel filter changes, because once it comes out, it will plug up a fuel filter, and I'm not kidding you, 30 seconds. And that'll be full. But what's really interesting about the water and the fuel is that you don't really think anything about it. But water's highly damaging to the diesel injectors in general, but diesel injectors in particular. So when the water flows through the fuel system, it kind of you know, marries itself in there, but not perfectly. But when you heat water, okay, it turns into steam. And when you heat diesel fuel, it atomizes and turns into a combustible substance. And what you don't understand, what people don't explain this, or maybe I'm going to try and explain it. Hopefully I don't mess it up too bad. But in a combustion chamber, the temperatures are incredibly high, very, very high. So when that means the injectors get really hot, and what keeps them cool is the fuel. And, you think, well, that's great. Water will keep them fuel. Well, it doesn't, because water has specific properties about being heated, and it actually turns into almost like an electrolysis eating away at your injectors. Okay, so when the water can conduct electricity, when it gets really hot, it starts to break apart and it becomes charged, and so then the water molecules actually start to eat away at the injector nozzles and the injector tips, okay? And then they explode. Very similar to ultrasonic cleaning. If you've ever seen an ultrasonic cleaner, they charge water to a frequency, and then the water creates little bubbles, these little tiny air bubbles, and it like blows rust off. Well, that's the same thing that happens in your motor. These little tiny bubbles charge up because of the specific properties of water, and it actually erodes and creates little cavities on your injectors, okay, until a point where they wear out or you've caused so much damage that the injector fails. It's very common, and it happens over time, and the way to prevent it is to perform fuel system treatment process, right? So if you keep the water in your fuel system to a minimum, your injector life is much longer, because you've basically left the injector cooling and lubrication to the diesel fuel, which is what its job is, as well as making the engine run. And even today, injectors are designed differently than old school injectors. We used to have lots and lots of sulfur in the fuel, and it actually helped keep the injectors lubricated. It was like lead in the gas, right? You never would think that lead in gasoline would keep valves from eroding, right? But it worked. It actually worked. Well, we don't do that anymore. We haven't done that in 50 years. So we had to redesign engines to make sure that valves did not recede in a head because there was no lubrication. So injectors have changed because we have super low sulfur in our fuel. That's why they call it ultra low sulfur. But there's still a small amount in there that helps do the lubrication and protection. But injectors have over time evolved because these new demands have evolved. But water still has remained, and the water will do the damage. That's why algae and water in your fuel is so bad. That's why diesels have water separators on them, keep the water out of your fuel. Okay, that's why they have two filters now: water separator and a primary, a primary water separator and a secondary. But if you have algae and you treat the algae, get ready because you're going to change both of them. Now, filters on trucks are really fun. Just so you know, because they put them in all kinds of places. I love Dodge. Dodge has got this one up at the engine that you got to lay on top of the motor and crawl down there and take it apart. And I'm telling you what. It's like the hardest thing on the planet because you can't reach it, you can't see it. There's no, it doesn't have any specific tool to put on it. So, and then they got one under the chassis that's not so bad. But if you're changing your filters, make sure that you understand where how many there are, and where they're located. Because just doing one is okay, but if you haven't changed the primary and you only change the secondary. On a new truck, you're going to get a light that says, oh, you need to change your fuel filter. The other thing is when the primary becomes plugged up, everything's going to filter over into the secondary, which is going to plug even quicker. Make sure you understand where your filters are, how to change them, which ones to get, which one goes in the right one, because they're different, they look different. You might get one and think, oh, that's it, but it won't fit because it's slightly different. Because, you know, we can't make them so that they're easy to identify. No, we got to make it so it's more complicated. I don't know why they just do it this way, right? So, and when you're doing them, they're usually 9 times out of 10 Ford and Dodge and Chevy. They all have a plastic housing. It's got an O-ring around it. Make sure you understand how the O-ring goes on. Make sure you don't. There's nothing that's going to make you madder than changing your fuel filter and cutting the O-ring on its way in and then having that thing just pour fuel out on the ground so you can do it all over again because you cut the O-ring putting it in. How do I know? Well, because I've done it. Even though I put it in there thinking, oh, it went in just right, I don't know, you cut it and it tears the O-ring and then it pours out. And, oh, wait, the O-ring comes with the filter. So now I could go buy a new $60 filter because I cut the O-ring. So when you're doing the service, understand what you're getting into and make sure you understand the parameters. That's all. Simple. It's simple to do, you know, if you have never done it before. You're for a treat, you know. You might have to buy two filters. The first time I ever did one, I had to buy three, you know. So don't feel bad. I mean, I thought I knew, and I was like, oh, yay. Yay. Good job, Ace. And you start thinking, well, why is it leaking fuel? And it's because you cut the O-ring. So they're all good. It's all fun, you know. Some of them are cartridge style. You can just actually spin on them by hand. Some of them are not, you know. A lot of medium duties use this cartridge spin-on filter. A lot of them use a regular, looks like an oil filter, spins on. Some of them are cartridge style. It looks like an old school one that literally came out of a 30 Model A. You know, you take the top off and you pull it out, and it's just an open filter. It looks like your air filter.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing. Jerry was on his keeping the fuel system clean. You know what else? Got to keep the air system clean. As I meant to say this when he was talking about this, and I'll just say it right now.
Keeping
the air system clean is just as important as keeping the fuel system clean. So if you're thinking about, you know, doing your fuel change and your oil change, check your air filter. Change your air filter. Odds are, and a good, and folks, I'm going to tell you something. A really good air filter will get really dirty really fast. And I know that sounds crazy, but that's its job. Its job is to get dirty.
That's right.
If the filter doesn't get dirty, it's not working. I looked at it a year ago, and it's perfect. And I put 60,000 miles on it, and it's not dirty. There's something wrong. Telling you right now, there's something wrong. If that filter looks brand new and there's no dirt on it, there's a problem. You have a problem someplace. Either A, that filter's garbage, or B, it's the filter's not working and air is running around it. So if when
you're
in service and you pull that filter out and it's all black and dirty, it's doing its job. It did its job. Throw it away and put another one in there so it can do its job. So keeping the air clean is really important. I don't know if anybody's ever heard this term, but in diesels there's a term that's called dusting. Oh, your motor got dusted. And the term originates from driving through the desert or through a dusty area and having the air filter not properly installed or not properly connected, and all the dust, the really fine sand dust, came through, bypassed the air filter, and got through the motor. And it wore it out, just like he sanded the paint off a car.
$16,000 worth. $16,000 worth. Yep. That was on an old 2000 diesel, Ford diesel. And what happened, they bought the K&N filter. They put the K&N filter in the Ford box, and they didn't check it around the top to make sure that it sealed. So when I seen it over here to your house, I asked him about it. I said, well, let's go. And I got a piece of paper towel, went down, we pulled the lid off of it, and I showed him. I said, see this right here? This is not supposed to be on this right here. It's not supposed to. This thing is leaking. It's bypassing. I said, so when you get home, you either pick up a Ford filter and put it in this so it'll seal in this box properly, or you go get another box and put this K&N filter in the K&N box. He says, yeah, I'll do that. Well, he didn't do it. About a month later, maybe 6 weeks, 7 weeks, somewhere around there, I get a call, and it had taken his motor out. And, you know, he's got the old 7.3. You know, you can't kill that if you poured a gallon of them. Well, yeah, he could.
No.
But it took it out.
Oh.
Yep. It's nasty. So if you're doing an aftermarket filter, people, make sure that it seals. Your proper installation of that filter is super critical, especially on a diesel. Diesels are expensive. And don't put a car filter in where the diesel filter is supposed to go, because it will suck the guts out of the car filter with a big turbo on it. It'll just suck it out. And then you've got a real expense, because that stuff goes inside the turbo and goes inside the engine. You do not want that.
And you have high pressurized sand, sawdust, well, I should say grit, you know, probably 220 grit sandpaper inside your engine, and it gets right on the walls. And I know, oh, well, the fuel should clean it off. Doesn't work that way. It mixes with the fuel and creates a wet sandpaper, and it sands. It will sand the rings right to the bone, and it will sand the sidewall. You'll have ridges in your liners. You'll have in the cylinders. You'll have ridges, and it will eat the rings alive. And you wouldn't think it would, but you got to remember all the things that happen inside an engine during its combustion stroke. That, you know, we're talking very high temperatures. We're talking, you know, so sand, silica sand, like dust that we have here, turns into glass. It becomes very abrasive. It becomes very hard. And because we don't live in the environment that the cylinder lives in, we can't see it. We can't. It's very difficult to explain and understand what everything that goes on there. Suffice it to say is that proper fuel and proper air filter maintenance are critical to engine performance and engine life. Just want to throw that out there, because you know you may
that
not think
it is
can,
perfect.
Because you may not think anything can happen, but you know you're not seeing what's going on, and you know what. You shouldn't have to. All you need to know is that the manufacturer built the engine and the system to work in a certain way, all the recommendations, and it'll work, because they understood what takes place. Those guys get paid lots of money to understand the dynamics of a motor, and way better than I can ever explain it, folks. I mean, I can explain it in layman's terms, but suffice to say, those guys really understand, and if you just follow their recommendations. I know.
Well,
we complain about, you know, all the emissions that are on a car. Well, I get it. They're there. You know, if you want to pull one off and think that you're smarter and you rip all that stuff off, well, you know, likelihood is you're going to have to put it back on later. And that's really even way more expensive. So I know I'm not smarter than the guy that built the car. Just saying.
Everything is supposed to be done for a reason. But I'll tell you something. You know, the Yuma board job from air filters not being changed has been around since I've been in business, and I've been in business 50 years. And you can see the Yuma bore job. I used to have a machine shop, and we bored engines, and we did all of this. And I had an opportunity to see these engines as they come in. We pull the tops off of them, pull the heads off of them. We look at everything. And that's the reason I say, now, if you have cylinders and you need, you got a burnt valve. Oh, I'm going to just do a valve job on my car. And so you pull both cylinder heads off and you do a full cylinder head on them. You've already got the compressor lowered in that one cylinder, and the rings have already started setting up to a different wear pattern. You put the compression back on the motor, the rings reset, and they go to wear out the rest of the ring, and then within 30 days, you got to replace a short block. And so, you know, I've learned to watch what is going on, because I had that machine shop for about 12, 13 years, 14 years, something like that. And I got rid of it because of the drive shaft. And drive shafts, I had to buy a bunch of big equipment to go in to handle all the drive shafts, and I didn't have room, and I was not going to go out and build a brand new building just to have an engine machine shop that I can go down to General Motors and buy a crate motor, or Ford and buy a crate motor, or Dodge and buy a crate motor, almost the same money in a heck of a lot shorter time. So, but yes, I know a little bit about that, just a little bit. But the Yuma bore job, that booger's been around forever. If you've got a diesel, people, the one thing you're going to learn real quick about a diesel, it's not a gasoline car. It's going to cost you more money to service. And the crazy thing about it, I have a 2018 Dodge diesel that it has more power than I will ever use. I can use a little Colorado or something to pull my horse trailer with, but yet I've got this big thing. I had the big equipment that I needed the diesel for. Now I don't use it. So now it's just a modified grocery getter. No, they are not designed as a grocery getter. You still have to put the engine cleaner in them. You still have to put the gas cleaner in them. Oh, I'm not using it. I don't need to do that. Yes, you do. you need to do it more than you would if you were using that thing as a diesel. I mean, if you used it as what it was designed to do. But it's not a grocery getter. You have to stay on top of it with all these additives and stuff. Just keep everything moving like it is. Jim was talking about the Lubricity. It looks like we've about run out of this hour. How much time we got there, Mr. Producer?
You got about 1 minute there, buddy.
All right, that's close. All right. But there's a guy that brought a customer brought in a diesel, 18-wheeler diesel injector when they did away with all the lube in it. And he said, this is what an injector looks like when you run this new diesel fuel in it. That thing was eat up. And that diesel was about 10 times as big as a regular diesel, regular injector in a car. So, yes, you have to maintain it. If you're not going to maintain a diesel and willing to spend double what you're going to spend on a car, don't buy it, because there you can't cheat and get away with this diesel. You can keep it. Oh, I'm going to run it 80, 90,000 miles. Then I'll sell it to the public and give somebody else this pain, because it's going to be a pain because you've already done the damage. That's the reason you check them out before you buy them. All right, we're out of time for the first hour. We'll be right back with the Simmons Car Care Show for the second hour of the Simmons Car Care Show. We'll be right back.